Please be seated.
Call the next case.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Matthew Peruschik, and I represent the appellant, Margarita Tejada, in this case. May I please have 3 minutes for rebuttal?
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is a negligence case that arises out of a slip and fall incident that occurred at Harris Teeter in Arlington, Virginia. There is one assignment of error, and it relates to a surveillance video, a portion of which the trial court excluded from evidence at trial. The video was clearly admissible, and for that reason, the trial court abused its discretion when it refused it. The facts of the case are relatively straightforward. There was a stack of boxes that contained beer that fell and exploded. Parts of the glass and the liquid spread across the floor in this Harris Teeter grocery store. A Harris Teeter employee arrives on the scene, is looking at the glass, looking at the liquid, and then my client walks through, slips, and falls.
But didn't Reynolds actually testify to everything that would have been on the video?
Respectfully, Your Honor, no, I don't think he would have. There's an important distinction between what he said and what the video would have shown. He certainly testified that there was nothing on the ground. In fact, he said that multiple times, Mr. Reynolds. It was dry, it was not wet. I think it was a total of 3 times. When he was impeached with his prior inconsistent statement, he stuck with his trial testimony. What the video adds is the video adds the jury being able to observe what he's actually doing. There is a fundamental difference between what was proffered, which is him pointing on the ground, pointing and gesturing with another Harris Teeter employee, then getting on the ground, the specific place where Ms. Tejada fell, and mopping it up with a paper towel.
But he said he did that. He admitted that he did that.
He did, but the dispute in the case was why he did it. His contention was, I did it.
And the video is not going to help you with the why.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
According to the proffer, anyway.
Well, I think what the video can show you is his demeanor and conduct. If he just does a quick wipe, stands up, and walks away, that's one thing, right? Perhaps then the jury can believe that he was telling the truth when he said, no, it was dry, I just did it to be safe. Why someone would take paper towel to the ground just to be safe?
The proffer doesn't say the video would lead to a visual depiction of a wet area in the compass place, right? So if the only thing the video tells you is they're wiping it up as if it looks like it might have been wet, we have 3 witnesses saying that. Why don't we flee immediately to harmless error and end the analysis there?
Well, because I think, Your Honor, that I think that there is a difference between when a witness says, the witness's testimony alone is it was not wet. The video gives the jury the opportunity to observe, why are you cleaning this? Because I can't impeach this witness with anything other than his prior inconsistent statement, which does not go to why you were cleaning it. He just says to be safe.
But what am I missing here? The video shows he was cleaning the compass area, right? Which is the point of the proffer.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Well, 3 people said, that's right, he was cleaning the compass area, and he says he was too.
Yes,
so what more does the video help us answer this question?
Well, it helps with why. I guess my answer is number one, it helps with why, but even putting that aside, I think it's important to remember the course of what happened with this witness. After he's impeached with his prior inconsistent statement, again, he was called as an adverse witness by Ms. Tejada. So during cross-examination, Harris Teeter questions the witness, and they say, Mr. Reynolds, you changed your story. Can you explain to the jury why you changed your story? And his answer was, well, I took a look at the video, and it made me realize I was thinking of a different accident. So putting aside the issue of do I need it to prove whether or not there's a dangerous condition on the ground, which I contend I do, it's my only substantive evidence, and it was excluded. Putting that aside, going solely to the impeachment issue, when a witness says I changed my story, my substantive answer on the central issue in this case, which is was there something on the ground or was there not, I changed my story because of this video. Now, we're not permitted to use that video to go ahead and impeach him and say, well, wait a minute, here we go. Here's what you actually did. Contrary to what you said, here's what you actually did. And the jury gets the opportunity then.
It seems like you're switching gears on and saying you're mixing apples and oranges because you're talking about what this video would show and why you wanted to do it, and now you're giving a different rationale than what you said.
Well, I don't think I'm trying to, Your Honor. I think that the rub here, so to speak, is that what Rule 2407 and 8.01-418.1, which is the statute from which the rule comes, the subsequent remedial measure rule, they both say you can use evidence. Let's assume that this is a subsequent remedial measure, which something done in the mere seconds after, mere minutes after an accident, I'm not sure if it qualifies under the rule, but let's assume it is for a second. That evidence is still admissible for any purpose other than to prove negligence. Now, what's interesting about that is that this court, in two cases, over 100 years ago, was faced with an issue, frankly, that is
with video?
Not with video, no, Your Honor. That would have been remarkable, to say the least. But you were faced factually with the same condition in that the defendants deny that the dangerous condition exists. And those are the two Virginia, North Carolina Wheel Company cases. The plaintiff in one case was Chalky, and the plaintiff in the other case was Harris. Now, in the Chalky case, the defendant went ahead and denied there's no dangerous condition. And the machine isn't defective, is actually what they said. And I believe in the Harris case, it was a saw. No, it's not defective. Now, the trial court in both cases said, well, when you deny that this condition is dangerous or the machine is defective, then the plaintiff has the opportunity to rebut that contention. Now, what's particularly interesting...
Well, what was the trial judge's ruling about the video?
In this case, the trial court, well, just said, I'm not going to let you play it past the point of the fall.
Well, but the trial court expressly said they'd let you use it for impeachment purposes in your case, in either impeaching with it or rebuttal.
Well, I think it's...
Why isn't that the end of this case? Because you didn't do that.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I think what we have to do is we have to look at the point when it was actually excluded and go all the way back to the beginning and look at the whole context. This initially comes up in a pretrial motion where Harris Teeter says, exclude this evidence, keep it out. And essentially what the judge does is defer. What the judge says is, well, it seems like there may be a contest over where this liquid was, whether or not it was where she fell. I'm going to wait and hear the evidence, and if they come in and say, there's nothing on the ground, don't worry about it, or there's nothing on the ground to clean up, then you get to use it as rebuttal.
Right.
That's what he said. Now, we fast forward to when it is actually proper, right? It is exactly what the trial court forecast. It happened. This witness says there's nothing on the ground. We are then permitted at that moment to say, wait a minute, that's not true. Here's the evidence. Now, when we offer that evidence, the trial court says, I'm not letting you. I'm not letting you do it. At that moment, when it's offered, which I think is the relevant question here, is
when was it offered?
What's that?
When was it offered?
It was offered during Mr. Reynolds' testimony, right, immediately after he denied that the liquid was where my client fell.
But the trial court said, on Joint Appendix 21, as rebuttal, I'll let you play the video from the fall until they start to clean it up.
Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, why didn't you do that?
Well,
on rebuttal.
I think, I sort of think that perhaps we're getting hung up on whether this is formal rebuttal, or to rebut the claim by the defendant. And I would suggest it's the latter. And in fact, in the Chalky case, the 1900 case that I was discussing a little earlier, this court used similar language. What this court said is that when the defendant denies that there's a dangerous condition, you can introduce this evidence to rebut the contention.
But can I interrupt you for a second? I'm not sure you're following the Chief's question. If the trial judge, let's suppose for the sake of argument you're right, the trial judge should have allowed it for informal rebuttal, impeachment of an adverse witness in the party's case in chief. Okay, he should have done that, let's assume, for the sake of argument. What he did do is he said, well, whatever, for sure, I'm going to allow you to do it for impeachment if they deny it, and Reynolds denied it, in rebuttal, which would ordinarily be thought of as the rebuttal case. But there was no rebuttal case using it. So maybe the trial judge, narrowed the window that you could use it, but he gave you a window and it wasn't used.
Well, I guess my answer to that is two-part, Your Honor. In the first part, with all due respect to the trial court, I have to prove my case. I have to prove that there's something dangerous on the ground. I have to be able to prove that my client fell because of it and that dangerous condition was negligent. If the witness testified, yes, there's liquid on the ground.
You have to survive a motion to strike, but you don't get to the jury until your rebuttal case is come and gone.
Well, I think absent that evidence, I have a problem in my case in chief. Obviously, we don't have an issue of there's no cross appeal on the motion to strike. But in the first place, I think I need it at that point as a practical matter. putting that aside, I think that what this court has to do is look at when it was actually offered, what was said, and what was done.
Was the motion to strike asserted by the defense?
It was, and it was overruled.
Okay, so you won the point. You didn't need it. You won it.
We did, Your Honor. But what Virginia Code Section 8.01-384 says, that if a motion or objection is made, there's no obligation to make it again in order to preserve your objection for appeal. And I understand that there was this pre-trial discussion about when this could potentially become admissible. And I totally appreciate that. But then I think what this court has to look at is what actually happened when it was offered. There was no discussion of rebuttal when it was offered. When it was offered, what the trial court said was, I'm not letting you do it, period. That's it. Not this, I told you this is rebuttal, wait for your rebuttal. He said, no, I'm not sitting here for 7 minutes is actually what I think he said at one point. And respectfully, I think that that's what this court has to look at. Now, after I have a clear ruling from the trial court, no, I'm not going to let you do this, I'm not aware of any law that would, or any case law or authority that would suggest that I have to continue to try to offer it in order to preserve my objection. In fact, what happens quite frequently in these trials is we have pretrial motions of one sort or another. The trial court sometimes rules, sometimes defers. I would suggest that what happened in this case was really the trial court deferring, saying, let me see what the evidence is. If X happens, it's admissible. Well, X happens, it's admissible by the trial court's own rationale, yet at that point it excludes it and says, I'm not going to let you do it.
On the off chance you were talking about informal rebuttal and the trial court was talking about formal rebuttal, when Harris Teeter put its client, its witness on the stand and they said the floor was dry, why didn't you offer rebuttal when the trial court says at the end of the case, any rebuttal?
We didn't, because when it was offered in this case, the court said it's offered. At the point it was actually offered, the court said, no, you're not permitted to do it. And again, to draw back to the Chaffee case, in that case, what this court said is that if someone denies it, you not only get to use the evidence to as affirmative proof that there is a dangerous condition, but importantly, what this court said is on cross-examination of that witness, you are entitled to the evidence so that the jury can test the veracity of what the witness just told the jury.
But if a trial judge says to you, you can use it for rebuttal, and then you try to use it in case in chief, and the trial judge said no, why isn't the natural inference from that, well, I can use it for rebuttal? Either in another informal sense as impeachment of a defense witness case in chief, or in the plaintiff's rebuttal case.
Well,
Your whole argument is that the no means you can't use it for any purpose with any witness in any stage of the case. That just seems like a very broad interpretation of no.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, it was no in the context in which it came up. Remember, we were told if this happens, you can use the evidence as rebuttal. And we took that to mean to rebut what this witness is saying, because we need it to impeach him. We need this evidence. Well, number one, we need it as direct evidence that there's something on the ground, the key issue in the case. So we need it to impeach him. You can't impeach a witness later. You can't. You lose the effect of impeachment, which the rule explicitly recognizes this evidence is admissible for impeachment. We lose that if we're not doing it right in front of the witness now. So even with the trial court's statements regarding rebuttal, I think when it was offered, it was error to exclude it, given the fact that the witness had just denied that there was, in fact, a dangerous condition.
Counsel, help me again with why it's not harmless error with three witnesses saying, yes, we took paper towels and we wiped the floor. Why isn't it harmless error?
Well, respectfully, I don't think it was three witnesses. I think it was the same witness.
Or three times, the same witness three times.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, I think in the first part that it is for the jury to observe this witness and determine why he was doing it. That was the fact that was disputed. Our contention, of course, is you don't point at the ground, take a paper towel, get on the ground, and start wiping it up just for the fun of it. Clearly there's something there that you're wiping up. Mr. Reynolds' contention was, well, I did it because I was being safe. That was why I did it. So I think in the first place, what it adds is the jury having the opportunity to observe what actually happened, because, of course, there's no direct evidence, because my client doesn't know on what she fell. There's no direct evidence to support my case, only the circumstantial evidence that comes from the video itself. But more importantly, when this witness changes his story at trial and says, I previously testified it was wet, I am now telling you it was dry. And the reason I did that, the reason I changed my story, is because of this video that is then excluded from evidence by Harris Teeter. It's fundamentally unfair to my client. We don't have the ability to impeach this witness. We don't have the ability for the jury to, in the words of Chalky, assess the credibility or the veracity of what he just told the jury when he says, why did you get down and clean it up? I see my time.
Can I ask you one quick question?
Yes, sir.
You wanted the whole thing in, right?
Yes.
And what the court said on page 21 is, then as rebuttal, I'll let you play from the fault until they start to clean it up. So in other words, even the rebuttal would have simply been a truncated version of the video and not the whole thing as you were trying to get.
It appears that that would have been the case had the judge let us do it. That is what he said. Of course, I'm focusing on the specific cleaning. What I would also like to add is the amount of time and what these employees are doing on the video between the spill and the cleanup could also suggest whether there's liquid there or not. The proper was they're pointing down at the ground, the specific place where she fell. I think the jury should be able to see that. That's their job. And the standard on harmless error under the King case is this court must conclude that it could not have affected the result. And I'd suggest it's not, if we start getting into, well, maybe would it have, maybe would it have not, then I think we're getting into the province of the jury and that should have been left to them.
All right, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Joshua Hoffman. I'm here representing Harris Teeter. Objection to this appeal. I think it shouldn't be lost as a preliminary matter that the jury was given a plethora of evidence. My motion to strike was denied. We weren't even allowed to give any argument on a directed verdict following the close of evidence. And the jury went back in the room and came to its decision based upon a whole series of evidence, including having seen the video multiple times of what occurred with the beer stack collapse, what occurred with the initial cleanup reactions, including the fact that this was a one-minute response, including the fact of Mr. Reynolds walking away, hearing testimony about a warning being given, seeing four people walk over the exact same spot, having no problems, including the appellant's nanny, who was right in front of her by 5 seconds, who herself testified she had no issue walking over the area. They took all of this back. They, to add something else, they were able to see how Ms. Tejada carried herself as she walked. She had evidence about her putting her leg across herself, holding something in her hand potentially. No matter what the jury decided, whether they decided on primary negligence or whether they decided on contrib, they made that decision. And it cannot be disturbed here but for there not being any credible evidence to support it. Their argument is essentially that there is some evidence that may have changed this verdict. Well, with due respect, that's just not the standard for overturning what we have as a jury verdict here.
Yet the issue is not sufficiency on appeal, counsel. The issue is admissibility of evidence.
Yes. And getting to that, I want to address the point, Riven, that Mr. Reynolds changed his testimony because of the video. I think it's oversimplifying it to say that that's what it was. He didn't change it because he saw what happened after the fall. He saw the video itself. Oh, this is the lady that fell. He testified to it. He didn't testify that, oh, this was the time where she fell and I waited a few minutes to wipe over the area. He didn't say that at all. He just said watching the video as a whole refreshes recollection as to what incident he initially testified to at his deposition. So it wasn't to show the jury a small portion of that video as if that was what he needed to have his test, his veracity judged upon, I think is oversimplifying it. As noted before, he admitted 3 times, yes, I went down on the ground. I wiped over the area with paper towels. Marisol Rodriguez, another witness, testified, while I was waiting for Ms. Tejada to be attended to, I saw somebody go by. We don't know whether she was referring to Mr. Reynolds or somebody else, but she further confirmed that. Another one of the witnesses, Mr. McConnell, says, initially, there wasn't a wet floor sign in that area. And they all testified of the reason why. There wasn't anything there. And that really gets to the point of what the proffer is and what it is they wanted to show. They wanted to show activity occurring after the incident, which they contend is demonstrative of a hazardous condition on the floor. And that's precisely the evidence they elicited from live testimony several times from the stand. From Mr. Reynolds 3 times, from Ms. Rodriguez, who was testifying by a transcript, and by inference from Mr. McConnell. So it's simply cumulative. And there has been case law which we cited from the Western District which says that live testimony is preferable to any other kind of testimony. And when talking about judging a person's actions, you have Mr. Reynolds right up on the stand. The jury had the opportunity, which is their dominion and province, to look at him and decide, is this person telling me the truth about the reason why he says what he did, or that he was confused about the initial...
You're saying live testimony is preferable to the video?
I'm sorry, sir?
You say live testimony is preferable to the video.
I think it is.
Absolutely. Well, how come for just hundreds of years we have a phrase that a picture is worth a thousand words?
Same people who say possession is nine-tenths of the law.
Oh, no, that's different. That's different. There's something very unique about visibly seeing a video.
I certainly, the video would have shown what he testified to. But in terms of a picture being worth a thousand words, this question still would have been. The question posed to him was, did you clean up that?
I think your position is really sort of your opinion that... verbal testimony is better than a video. I'm not sure that anybody's ever said that in a case, but it certainly is your view. Now, let me ask you this. And there are two general categories of motions in limine. And one is where the trial judge has said, no, under no circumstances is this dentist going to be testifying in a neurosurgical case. So forget it. So it's done. The other is where it's a conditional ruling conditioned upon evidence that's going to be developed at trial. I'm concerned that this is a combination of the two. Because what he said was, if they produce this kind of testimony and you need it to rebut it and to impeach, I will let you do it up to the point where the fall occurs. So to the extent that that's done, it seems to me that he has a legitimate claim that he has preserved error. It might be harmless error, but it's not a preservation issue. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, they show, a lot of video was shown, including the portion of video that you talked to, what happened up to and including the fall. The jurors were shown the breakage, the initial efforts, what happened, and they were shown up to including her fall. I think they were even shown a little bit past it. They just weren't, the portion that they're referring to is the portion where Ms. Tejada is on the floor waiting for assistance, and then there's activity for approximately 15 minutes before the emergency people come and assist her from the premises.
Well, I understand that. I'm trying to determine how that manages to parse what kind of a legal question we have. On the one hand, it's not a question of preservation, it seems to me. It's preserved. On the other hand, it might be harmless error.
Well,
that's the only reason why I ask you that
question.
Sure.
And again, I think there's an issue that would happen with the judge in two different times. You have the initial ruling, pre-trial. Then, when they attempt to get it in, the trial judge says, well, we were talking about something different. That point's never explored upon by counsel for Ms. Tejada. They never say, well, Judge, are you referring to your previous ruling? Was that based on a subsequent need to measure? Was this based on accumulation? Is this based on irrelevance, materiality? What's it based on? They simply just accepted that, even though the judge had said, well, maybe what you're talking about now isn't what we were talking about before. I think at that point you have an obligation to determine what it is the evidence is being excluded on the basis of. So I think that's where the preservation error occurred, not to mention it wasn't used in rebuttal. And I think the reason rebuttal is because the witnesses themselves were dismissed. It couldn't come up in rebuttal because they were consented by the plaintiff to leaving the premises. You can't ask them questions about the video when they're not there.
At the time of the so-called proffer, did you agree that that was an accurate proffer?
Which proffer are you referring to?
The one where they suggest that... that they proffered what the video would show.
I believe the proffer, Your Honor, was that the proffer would show that there was a length of time.
No, my question is, did you agree with the proffer?
We didn't object to the proffer, no, Your Honor.
So you were silent?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is that a proffer? Proffer?
A proper proffer on the part of either myself or
No, no, it raises the question. is a proper proffer to offer what a video would have shown, and it's just simply accepted without there being either an agreement on the other side or silence.
I don't think it's proper as to the truth of what is being asserted. I simply think it's proper as to what the video would show for furtherance of the argument as to its admissibility. So, no, I don't think it's a proper as to it establishing as a matter of record that the video shows X. I think, though, in terms of advising the court as to what the evidence is in order to assist it with its ruling on admissibility, I think as far as that goes, it was fine.
Well, if that's the case, that issue had already been decided. That issue had been decided in a motion in limine. If you show this, I'm going to let you put it in.
I would agree, and it's not at the judge. I think that's what he was getting at, was that we've gone through this. We talked about it in the beginning. We tried once before. We tried again. The ruling's always been the same. We're not in rebuttal.
All right. I understand your position.
But in terms of when this can be sequenced, I think it's clear that the court's ruling have been that the trial judge can control the order and sequencing of evidence. The trial judge did that here. He advised it was supposed to be done in rebuttal. This evidence is within the nature.
But that's not what he said.
What?
He said up to when they start cleaning it up. And that's at least a significant part of what they wanted to show was the actual cleaning up. So yes, you could show part of it, but not a significant part. That was unequivocally excluded, I thought.
I didn't necessarily read it like that, Your Honor. However, that evidence, what the evidence is, whether it takes the form of a video or testimony, that evidence was before the jury. Part of it was highlighted in closing, although counsel did not highlight in closing specifically that there was action that was done within 15 or certain amount of minutes after this happened. Counsel did highlight the fact that Mr. Reynolds had changed his testimony, that he had said initially that the floor was wet. So when we're talking about judging the credibility, that's exactly what counsel directed the jury to do in their deliberations. Judge the credibility of Mr. Reynolds as to what he's saying. And the very evidence they wanted to use to judge him upon that was elicited in live testimony during trial. We cited to that the Moore Lumber case in terms of a party having an opportunity to use evidence and being told by the court it can be used at a certain time and that the failure to do so was a waiver. Now, that case is from 1910. I haven't seen anything that changes the position of the court since the ruling on that case.
Counsel, do you think it's somewhat placing form over substance? The court said you can use it in rebuttal. He puts the witness on. The witness is considered to be adverse. The witness says it was dry. I was just cleaning it up out of an abundance of caution. Why wouldn't that be an appropriate place to play the video?
Well,
had it not if no other reason stood in the way?
If I may just make one point of clarification as to the procedure of Mr. Reynolds. Mr. Reynolds was actually not called as adverse initially.
He was not,
no.
But he was declared adverse during the process of
yes,
his testimony.
When it was pointed out that they were trying to impeach their own witness. Would it not have been a time then? Well, again, I think we get back to the power, inherent power of the trial court judge to control the order and sequencing of evidence. Judge wanted that evidence in rebuttal. I believe that evidence is within the nature of rebuttal. I understand there's this difference between this informal and formal rebuttal. But again, there was no clarification made as to that. Counsel never said, well, wait a minute, Judge, I thought you ruled initially that I could use this in rebuttal. Then there's an opportunity at that time, the best possible time, to say, all right, well, what I was talking about was formal rebuttal. After the defense is done with their case, then you can go ahead and use this. Or at that point, you can say, well, no, I've given it further consideration, and it's inadmissible for any number of reasons. So I think that's the problem there, is that this was sort of left hanging, and this responsibility of counsel to determine at that point, well, what is the basis of this ruling, so I can try to either make a proper objection for the record, or at least understand what it is the court is looking for, so I can go from there and try to fix whatever the issue is.
I've never, ever heard the term rebuttal used in the direct impeachment of a witness's testimony. Rebuttal has always been used as a separate presentation of evidence after the plaintiff rests.
I have no disagreement.
When the defendant rests.
But yes, that has been always my understanding of what rebuttal is. If it's called anything else, like cross-examination, impeachment, whatever you have, but in my trial court, I've never heard it referred to as rebuttal at that time. I think the court is being very clear as to when it believed this evidence should be used, and then it wasn't. And I think it's important to note, as I see my time is ending here, that the appellant has made it very clear that this was the most important evidence to Ms. Tejada, that she didn't have anything else. Taking apart that for a second in terms of their burden of proof in this case, if it was, I just believe it would be natural then to have presented it in rebuttal, to at least attempt to comply with the judge's ruling, or to do everything more possible to try to get this evidence in, to show and to highlight to the jury what it was. Instead, even though they had listened to the direct testimony from the witnesses, it wasn't even mentioned in the closing. The only thing mentioned was, please listen to what Mr. Reynolds says, please listen to what his testimony said.
Is it your burden to show harmless error? I mean, I'm not asking you to concede that there was error, but assuming, for purposes of my question, that there was, who has to shoulder the burden of showing that, oh no, it didn't matter, it's harmless?
Well, I'm not sure. I would say that in this case, however, I believe that the law and application of the facts here is clear that it was harmless error.
Okay. Good enough.
Thank you. If there are no more questions, I appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And your time has expired as well. Call the next.